Hello, ladies. Are you struggling with hair loss? I want you to know you're not alone. Hi, I'm Bambi Staveley, former registered nurse, author, founder of Boost and Blend, and someone who, probably just like you, has had first-hand experience with hair loss, which is all covered in my latest book, Hair Loss in Women. When I noticed my own hair thinning 15 years ago, I went looking for information and I went looking for products for women, just like you and me. But all I could find out there was products made for men. And most of the information I could find was about male pattern baldness. Well, that's not much help. So I set out to change that. I want to see women with hair loss talking about it and talking to each other, sharing their stories from a place of knowledge. So join me as I meet some courageous women. I'll share some information and we'll learn together on the Hair Loss in Women podcast. Hi ladies, it's me, Bambi, back again with another episode of the Hair Loss in Women podcast. Coming up a bit later, I'm going to talk about triggers and causes. And I'm going to explain the difference to you because I think it's really fundamental to hair loss in women. But first, we're going to talk to Bridget. Bridget is actually an alias because Bridget is going to share her story. And this is one that she has kept private up until now. And I think many of us can feel the same way Bridget feels. We haven't told people about our hair loss. We keep it very private. And so I think we all understand how Bridget is feeling and has felt about her hair loss. So it's very kind of her to open up to us. So I hope you get a lot out of this conversation. Bridget, hi, and thank you so much for being here.
Hi Dan. Thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, so is this the first time you've spoken out about your hair loss?
Yes. Yeah, I've mentioned it in passing to a couple of people, but not in any great detail.
And we're actually using the name Bridget today, but that's not your name. We won't mention what your name is. But the reason that we're doing that, I guess, is for, like so many women, this is something that you generally keep hidden.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you hide it as much as you can. Is there an overall essence of feeling that you have about hair loss that you'd like to share?
Why me?
It's
not something that I ever expected to have to deal with. I remember growing up and my aunt, so we're talking in the 70s, she had very fine hair and she had a wig that she would wear for special occasions. And I didn't think very much of it because that's just what it was. And she was like, she was white as white and beautiful. But now when I look back, I think, wow, what a brave woman she was the days that she didn't wear her wig, because it was quite noticeable that she had very fine hair and you could see her scalp.
Right.
I never thought I'd be thinking of wigs and hair pieces for my future.
No. Well, it's not something that we as young women ever expect or think about. I think for young men, they might look at their father or their grandfather and think, oh, this is something that will happen to me one day. And they gradually, over a period of time, get used to the idea. But for women, we don't really expect that this is going to be in our future. So
not at all.
So when it is, it's quite a surprise.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So talk to me then about your journey. When did you notice you were losing your hair?
In my early 30s, I went to the hairdresser and he said to me, oh, look at you, you've got a double crown. And I didn't think anything wrong with it. I'd look at the back of my head. I don't know. My hair covers it.
Yeah.
And didn't think anything of it. Then probably 10 to 15 years later, I had changed hairdressers, I'd had a child, I'd had all this other stuff happening, and my hairdresser then, the first time, she said, so have you actually spoken to anybody about your bald patch?
Oh,
and I went,
goodness.
What bald patch? And she said, the one that's on the back of your head. And she showed me, and I was horrified because no hairdresser, no one had said anything to me up until that point.
Mm.
It was just hidden because it was a patch. My hair hadn't started pinning out yet. So it was just a patch, so it could be cut to hide it. But I was absolutely horrified, and I didn't know what to do.
Mm. And so did you do anything about it then?
I kind of went into denial for a little while, and then probably about 6 months, maybe 12 months later, my hairdresser said, you really should just see your doctor. So I did. I went to my GP, who I wished I could have seen, my regular one, but she had just recently retired. So I saw her replacement, who was a young man, probably about 15 years younger than me. And he took one look at me and said, oh, that's female pattern balding. You could try Rogaine, I suppose. And that was it.
Wow.
I just went, thanks. Thanks.
Mm.
And walked out, and I never went back to him, funnily enough.
Fancy that.
So, yeah.
Well, I think that's the experience a lot of women have had is, and me included, is that a male doctor or medical professional looks at your hair and you say you're losing it, and they go, well, you're not really, or you've got a lot of hair, or what's your problem, or, you know, and he might be truly balding, obviously balding, I should say, I guess. And so for us, that instant sort of denial or dismissal is really heartbreaking because you know what's going on and you feel that you're not being heard. And because you're not being heard, there's really seems to be nothing you can do about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So what are some of the things you've tried over the years?
Well, I didn't try anything like Rogaine or anything like that because I hadn't heard anything good about any of it. I was blonde at the time, and wasn't as noticeable. And it wasn't until I was matron of honour in a wedding, and at the reception it was really windy and they were filming from behind, and I saw my hair fly up and saw my bald patch. I don't know if anybody else noticed it, but I saw it in the wedding video.
Right.
And that's when I started looking for something to disguise it so that you wouldn't be able to tell that there wasn't hair there.
Mm.
I hadn't heard about Boost and Blend at that stage. I was importing stuff from the States, and it was horrible. It was like this powdery stuff that you put on with the Powerpuff, and it stained your hands and it stained everything. It was just horrendous, and it was expensive, and it took forever to get here. So I'd buy a heap so that I didn't run out. And I've tried shampoos and all that sort of thing, but I haven't found anything that has actually made a difference. Mm-hmm. So I just go down the route of hiding it as much as I can.
Yeah, with hair fibers is what you're talking about.
Yes,
so,
yes, yeah. Now that's exactly right. Yeah. That's what I use, and I'm so grateful for that product because it means I can walk down the street, and if the wind blows my hair and someone walking behind me doesn't see it,
yeah,
and people don't notice. Yeah. So, and I've got a very good hairdresser now who's very supportive, and she cuts my hair very well. Oh. So she hides a lot of sins.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's great. Well, so you say Is it thinning all over? So you said
it is now. Right, it is now.
Okay.
Yes.
So, do you ever have a lot of shedding when you wash your hair, or is this all just a gradual thing?
It's been really gradual. I've never really noticed like clumps coming out or anything. It's more. It's really gradual. I've always had really fine hair, but a lot of it.
Mm.
Now I've just got really fine hair.
Yeah.
So it's not something that I would notice very much.
Right.
In the shower or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. Can you see hair growth yourself? You know, the little bits sticking up everywhere when you blow dry hair? Okay, yeah. And I'm assuming that of late or of recent times you've had blood tests and gone down a different, you know, various paths with your GP?
No, because since that experience with that GP, I actually haven't spoken to the doctor I see now about it.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, you know, and that's just so common, I think, that that we don't really want to, it's sort of embarrassing and you don't really want to talk to anyone about it. And when we feel so dismissed, it takes away that, you know, you might have said it to the first guy expecting that he would say, oh yeah, oh right, okay, look, let's try this or that, or you know, I've had success with something. But when you get dismissed, you sort of feel like, well, I don't really want to bring this up again.
No, because exactly.
You don't know what kind of result, what, you know, sort of result you're going to get.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So you live with your husband, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So does he know about your hair loss?
No.
No?
No, he doesn't. I've mentioned it in passing. He has. I'm so envious of him. He has the most beautiful, thick, wavy, luxurious hair, and his midlife crisis is he has grown it out. It's past his shoulders.
Oh, my goodness.
I envy him so much. And there have been times where he said, oh, at least I'm never going to be balding. And I've just in passing said, well, you know, I'm losing my hair, or my hair's thinning. And, okay, I love him, but he's not the most observant man.
Right.
So that would just go straight over his head. Oh, look back. So an example. I wear glasses and I changed frames. I went from a bright red pair to a blue pair, and it took him a month to notice.
Yeah, okay.
So he doesn't look at stuff like that. He's got other qualities.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it goes in one ear and out the other. I'm sure if I showed him, if I stood there and said, look at the back of my head, this is what I'm talking about, he would obviously realise that it's not something, I can't do it, I can't show him.
Mm. Okay, so him ignoring it or not being aware of it, in a way, is that better for you, or would you feel better if he had an opinion?
I don't really know, Bambi. That's a really interesting question. I think with him not knowing, I can kind of be a little bit in denial still. Because, like I said, you know, I style my hair and you can't see it with what I use. So it's hidden.
Mm.
But then there's a part of me that just wishes that I didn't feel so embarrassed about it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Bridget.
I
can hear the emotion in your voice, and actually it's made me go have goosebumps, just because I know how that feels. It actually makes tears well up in my eyes, because I totally understand the feeling of looking in the mirror and feeling like, well, you know, I've tried everything, I'm doing everything I can. I try to put on a brave face, you know, I put in my hair fibers, I style my hair as best I can. And I think there's a lot of women who feel exactly as you feel and as I feel. It does feel so hopeless at times. It feels like it's so hard to keep going. You know, it's so hard to keep a brave face on when it bothers you and you feel that way. So I'm sorry to make you think it through again, but you know, it's
no, that's okay.
Yeah, it's tough. So, do you think that hiding your hair loss, or thinking about it, or living with it, takes up a lot of energy in your day, or are you kind of able to move past it at a certain point in the day and then just, you know, not really think about it?
For me, it's I've set up my little routine after I do my hair and my makeup and everything. And I check the back of my head a million times, then I have to just walk away and let it be, because otherwise I wouldn't leave the house.
Mm. Yeah.
Basically is what it would come down to. If I didn't put on that brave face and go, okay, well, it is what it is. If people see what they see, then so be it. And really, you know, deep down, I know people aren't looking at me. They don't give a about, you know, anybody else. Everyone's concerned about themselves. It's my own vanity that is what's driving the way I'm feeling.
Yeah, you say vanity, but I actually think that there's something much deeper than that, and it's our self-esteem, it's our who we are, who we identify as. And, you know, I often say, and one of the things that came out in when I was writing my book about this is we should try looking out and smiling at people. And, I mean, I make a huge effort to smile at people who look like nobody smiled at them today. And there's, you know, I just want to try and look out and try to create happiness in someone else's face, I guess. And I always feel better when I do that. It kind of gets me gets me through tough spots. And yes, I don't think people are looking at our hair. I really don't. I think, well, once we've got hair fibers in, and it's really our secret mostly, you know, particularly if you've got a great hairdresser who can help to you know, disguise with style and all those sorts of things, as I've done, and I know you've done, Bridget. And I think, you know, once we've done the best we can, we've disguised as best we can, then I think people just look at our face and, you know, smiling and trying to get through. I know this all sounds, you know, very nirvana, that we can all go through the day smiling. I realize that we can't, but sometimes it helps to just look forward and smile and forget about it. You know, I don't think people are noticing. I really don't. I mean, the odd person maybe, but even then, I think that's rare. I think once we've sort of done what we can to cover it up, and I mean, that's not the case for everyone. Not everyone can cover it up with hair fibers.
No.
So, you know, we are lucky in that sense that we do have an option. Not everybody does. So is there something that you wish that you could tell other women about hair loss? Is there something that we would like other women to know, or that you'd like other women to know?
That it doesn't make you any less of a woman if you're losing your hair, because the way I was raised, you know, long hair was what was feminine, you know, and that's, every woman was supposed to have long hair, but that's not what makes you feminine. Mm. It's more about the kindness in your heart, the smile on your face, the way you treat other people. That's what makes you a woman. That's what makes you loving. And whether you've got hair or not, that doesn't change. And also, just when something like this happens, in a way, I'm grateful, because there could be so much worse.
Mm.
You know, there are other people who I see every day, and you know that their life, there are other things in their lives that are quite hard, but really, in the grand scheme of things, the fact that I have to hide that I've got patches of baldness on my head is really not, it's not the end of my world.
Mm. Yeah. Though it does feel like it sometimes, I know.
Yes, it does. When I actually think about it, like I have this morning, then yes, then I get very emotional.
Mm.
But for the most part, it is what it is.
Mm. Yeah. Have you been able to connect with any other women or any community for women with hair loss?
Not really. I haven't, to be honest, I haven't looked to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's still part of my denial that, you know, if I speak to other women, then I'm more, I don't want to say accepting of it, but it's, you know, it is, it has to be part of my life. So I think down the track, though, that will be something that I look to do.
Mm.
I actually have a relatively close friend who has extremely, extremely thin hair. It's very noticeable. And I don't know how she does it. She doesn't hide it. She doesn't do anything.
Right.
So one of these days I'm going to have the conversation with her about it.
Yeah.
Because I just love how this is who I am. Just take me as I am, and that's it.
And
I admire that.
Yeah, so, I admire that too.
So I can't. I'm not at that stage yet.
No,
I know the day will come, because I do. I do. And when I have a bad day, I entertain the thought of shaving it all off.
Mm. Yeah,
and just getting rid of it all, and just being like that.
Yeah.
But then reality hits.
A lot of women do get to that point, and either just wear their head with pride, or find it easier to wear wigs when they've shaved the hair off, just because the wigs sort of tend to sit better, so I'm told. So Yeah, well, look, Bridget, thank you so much for bearing your soul for us and for the many women out there who are sitting at home. I think just knowing that they're not alone, that there's other women out here and we feel very similarly. And, you know, there is a sisterhood, though may we be perhaps silent, at least we are out here and hopefully just having these conversations will help make somebody else's day a little brighter and, you know, that's what we want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Bambi.
Yeah, so thank you, Bridget. Oh, thank you again, Bridget. It's a really brave thing to share your hair loss story. And if you're feeling brave and want to share your story too, please send me an email. My email address, my personal email address, is bambi@boostandblend.com, and I will read your email and I'll get back in touch with you. But now it's time to talk about the underlying causes of hair loss and the triggers that often start all of this. Okay, back again. So today I want to talk about something that I think is fundamental to understanding hair loss in a woman, completely different to hair loss in men. I mean, we know male pattern baldness is caused by the change in a man's hormones, pure and simple. It's been studied for decades. There are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of papers on it. Male hair loss is very, very well understood. But for women, it's just not that simple. One thing that is generally understood about female hair loss is that it is what is called multifactorial, which means many factors are involved. But what I find really interesting is although this idea that female hair loss is known to be multifactorial, that one point seems to be overlooked by just about everybody, certainly by many doctors. So what does it actually mean? Well, it means that there are many factors involved in our hair loss. So if there are many factors, then it's really hard to find the cause. And if it's hard to find the cause, then it's going to be hard to fix. So no wonder you're not finding a simple answer, right? No wonder your doctor hasn't figured it out either. And guess what? Not only is it difficult from that point of view, but it's unique to every individual. So the triggers and the causes in you and me are going to be completely different. Let's boil it down into an easy-to-understand group of factors, if you like. They're grouped broadly in two separate headings. There's triggers and then there's underlying causes. So let's talk about triggers first. So triggers are things like, for example, a diet, a ketogenic diet or a harsh diet of some kind. Not that I'm saying ketogenic diets are harsh, but they can cause some good, decent weight loss and a definite change in diet. Or maybe a sudden change in estrogen levels, which can happen in a postpartum situation. Estrogen levels drop suddenly. Or a stressful event, that can be a trigger. An illness, many, many illnesses can be triggers, but COVID-19 in particular is known to be a trigger for hair loss. Surgery, particularly major surgery, a big move, maybe moving overseas, for example, or a divorce, you know, a terrible relationship breakdown. And some people recover, most people actually recover really easily from a trigger. But interestingly, others don't. But why doesn't everyone who goes through one of these triggers lose their hair? I mean, not everybody who gets a new job or goes through a divorce loses their hair, right? And then why doesn't everyone who does go through these triggers grow their hair back? The answer to that is because there's something else going on. And that's what we group under the topic of underlying causes. So unfortunately, there are many, many underlying causes, and I couldn't possibly list them all. I have listed most of them in my book, though, Hair Loss in Women, but some of the most common underlying causes, for example, are low estrogen. So a woman's estrogen starts to drop after the age of 40, and it does continue through until menopause. And menopause also, while considered to possibly be an underlying cause, may not in itself be the underlying cause. It could involve something else, like a poor diet, for example, or low iron. Low vitamin D. Another possible underlying cause, which is very common, is digestive issues. So irritable bowel, malabsorption. Malabsorption is when the body isn't absorbing the right kind of nutrients from the food that you're eating. And this can actually be caused by medications, for example. Another underlying cause perhaps is thyroid issues, very common. Another one is perhaps being overweight with insulin resistance, which again could involve a poor diet. Long-term stress is also an underlying cause. But you could have more than one of these, so that just complicates things even further. You fix one, but you haven't identified that you've got others or fixed the others. No wonder we're all confused. So have you had a trigger in your life? Are you still waiting for your hair to grow back? And it's only been 3 to 6 months? Well, okay, wait a little bit longer, because it does take up to 3 to 6 months for the trigger to have gone away, perhaps, and for your body to start recovering. So it actually can take up to a year for your hair to grow back after a trigger. But if it's been longer than a year since the trigger, then I suggest you start looking for other underlying causes. And I think we know that hair loss in a woman is indicating that something is wrong. And while it's not easy to try and get to the bottom of your underlying causes, it really is a worthwhile pursuit. One of the other things that I hear very often is that women say, oh, it's just hereditary. You know, my mother, my auntie, or both have hair loss. And so I figured I've just inherited that. Well, I'd like to suggest that may not necessarily be the case. What I think is often the case is that you've inherited the propensity for the underlying cause. So maybe your mother had an inability to store iron, or maybe she also had a sharp decline in estrogen at some point at a certain age, or maybe she had thyroid issues. But because she didn't know that those underlying causes were there, she didn't know to look for them or fix them. So I'd say don't assume that because you have hair loss and say your mother or other female relatives had hair loss, that it's a done deal for you. There's nothing you can do. You won't know if you don't look. You won't know that you don't have some of these other underlying causes if you don't look. But I'd have to say female hair loss is really a complex issue. There's so much more I could tell you about triggers and underlying causes. So I'd suggest that if you can, maybe get hold of a copy of my book, because I do go into triggers and underlying causes in a huge way in my book. But nonetheless, this is enough to send you down the direction of where to look and make a doctor's appointment and start off with a blood test. That's the first place I always suggest you look. Of course, as in all these episodes, the advice given is of a general nature. Please check with your doctor for your own specific health advice. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this episode today. It's been very interesting listening to Bridget tell her story, and I hope that you get something out of our little Did You Know segment on triggers and underlying causes. And as I always like to say, kindness is beautiful, so wear it every day. Thanks for joining me on the Hair Loss in Women podcast, and a big thank you to the women who share their stories here and with others in their community. One of the hardest things about hair loss for women is that we don't talk about it. So if you do want to hear more, please subscribe to the podcast. And if you like what you heard, why not leave a review? Positive reviews will help other women to find this podcast too. You can also find out more in my book, Hair Loss in Women. This podcast has been recorded in Sydney, Australia, and is produced by Pod and Pen Productions.